If you're like me, and for the past couple months, your TikTok and YouTube feed has been nothing but recordings of court cases for some reason, then you've probably come across something known as a sovereign citizen. A sovereign citizen, for those of you that don't know, in very diluted terms, is someone who believes they do not have to abide by the rules of the country that they live in because they themselves are not a member of the country they live in and instead are just these lonely vagrants who exist to walk across the earth or something. What that tends to mean in practice is sovereign citizens get into all kinds of hijinks with anything that involves a court case or a police officer or authority in general. So if you're also like me, you've probably been watching these guys and wondering, where do they get all this? Like, if you listen to the phrases that a lot of them repeat, sure, it may sound crazy, but there is a methodology to it. A lot of them will use the same terms and tactics and seem to follow a similar curriculum to get out of trouble. So I made the foolish mistake of finding out what these sovereign citizens are all about. And I came across not only a group of people who don't like the cops very much, but a group of people who have their own conspiracy theories, understanding of history, and in some cases, religion. And it was all way too weird to not talk about, so that's what I'm going to do today. I'm going to talk about the history of sovereign citizens, primarily in the United States, but some of their effects in other countries as well. We're going to talk about their weird and wacky version of American history, some of their more outlandish conspiracy theories, why they think that can get them out of legal settings, and sadly, some real-world tragedies that have resulted because of their beliefs. A couple things I want to mention really quick before we get started. For one, the merchandise sale that I talked about in the last video, the profits of which are going to the Appalachian Rebuild Project, those items are still for sale at the link in the description below. So get in on them while you can, and thank you all so much for the support you've shown already. I haven't asked to see the official numbers because they'll probably make me cry, but I'm sure it's a lot. Thank you all very much for that. Speaking of charity, in a couple of days on Friday, December 6th, I will be live on Jimmy Here's Twitch stream as the two of us are going to have an all-day video game competition in order to raise money for Gamers Outreach, a charity that provides game stations and other things for kids to play with in children's hospitals. It'll be a great time where I definitely won't kill Jimmy Here live on his own Twitch channel, but jokes aside, it is just something to try to make the holidays a little bit more special for some people who could really need it. So the link to both Jimmy's Twitch as well as the Tiltify link where you can donate early. We have like donation milestones where we'll do weird stuff if enough money's donated. So check those out at the link in the description if you're interested. And in whatever capacity you decide to give or watch, thank you very much. I promise you that us, as well as the kids, appreciate it. With all of that out of the way, if you're excited to hear about the crazy, kooky, and sometimes sad world of sovereign citizens, then stick around after the sponsor as we get into it. It's almost certainly a bad decision, but hey, I'm not your dad.
But you know what else is a bad idea? Being unhealthy. And trust me, I understand that eating what you're not supposed to is often far easier than eating what you are supposed to. So to ensure that I'm getting the nutrients that I need, I trust the brand that keeps sending me merchandise that I refuse to stop wearing. And that, of course, is AG1. AG1 is your easy one-stop shop that includes your multivitamins, phytonutrient blend, and probiotics in one easy scoop. Since I started taking AG1, I've had the energy to get through the day without slugging off or taking a nap. Because it's amazing the kind of things you feel up to accomplishing when your body starts getting the things it's asking for. So when I try to do everything from a gym routine to planning out sponsorships to podcasts to making videos, it's nice to have someone in your corner making sure you have the energy to do all of those things. And AG1 has components for everything from your daily nutrients to your energy to your gut health to your immune support. That's because the people at AG1 have gone through rigorous testing to ensure that your blends of superfoods to multivitamins are taken care of in one easy drink. And I really mean easy, because all you need is 8 to 12 ounces of water and a spoonful of AG1 and you are good to go. Your body's kind of important, considering you only get one of them. So let AG1 help you take care of it. And right now, there's never been a better time to get in on their offer. That's because right now, if you head to the link in the description at drinkag1.com/windigoon, along with your order of AG1, you'll receive a free welcome kit. This includes a bottle of AG1's vitamin D3 and K2, 5 days worth of AG1 and their convenient travel packs, as well as a shaker bottle. That's right, to get in on all of this for free with your first subscription, head to the link in the description again at drinkag1.com/windigoon to get in on this incredible offer today. Thank you all so much for watching the ad. Thank you so much to AG1 for sponsoring the video. It really does mean the most. Hope you all check them out. Link is in the description, and we are back to the video.
We are going to go ahead and get into it, but as always, thank you for watching. So I'm excited to get into all of the weird and wacky conspiracies of sovereign citizens, but for any of that to make sense, we have to start with their history. A history that dates back to at least the 1970s. Now, it's not like pre-1970 government protest was unheard of. I mean, we had a whole civil war over it. But the group I want to talk about today seems to originate from the Posse Comitatus. Latin for force of the county, the posse came off of an old kind of frontiersman idea that sheriffs had the right to create posses in order to enact frontier justice when the need would arise. Well, around 1971, groups in the United States began to use that name in order to do things that weren't exactly frontier justice. Most of the founders of the posse seem to originate from something known as the Christian Identity Movement. The Christian Identity Movement is a far-right group that began to pop up after World War II in the United States that effectively believes the Jews as we know them today are not the actual chosen people or Israelites of God from the Old Testament, and instead, the true chosen people of God are white Europeans. Or in other words, history has been rewritten and hidden from us in order to hide the divinity of the holy white man. As you can imagine, this encourages not only a distrust of other ethnic groups, but a distrust of governments that are keeping all of this secret in the first place. One of these Christian Identity members was a man named William Potter Gale. During World War II, Gale served as one of General MacArthur's personal staff, and after the war, became an Episcopalian minister. There are several Christian Identity members who are credited with starting the Posse Comitatus, whatever, but Gale is often the one who is declared the founder of it. The main concept behind the Posse is that there is no legitimate government beyond the county level. Again, going back to the Latin translation being force of the county. So because of that, the Posse began to encourage its members to reject all forms of higher level government. So any government forms, things from driver's license to birth certificates to money and especially taxes, should be rejected. While this might have tipped a few heads in law enforcement at the time, the Posse wasn't big enough to cause a nationwide panic, at least not yet. Gale was eventually arrested in 1987 over a whole host of tax-related crimes. That's going to be a common theme through this video. And then Gale would die a year later while in prison in 1988. Also, apparently he was Jewish, which, given the whole Christian identity thing, is kind of funny. The Posse would get a lot of attention really quickly in 1983 thanks to one of their members named Gordon Call. Call seemed to be a Posse member at heart before it was cool. Because in 1967, he wrote a letter to the IRS where he called them, quote, the synagogue of Satan. And then in 1975, after the Posse got started up, he started the first chapter of the Posse in the state of Texas. And only a year later, in 1976, made a television appearance to talk about the Posse, while conveniently leaving out all the racism stuff. And throughout all of his public speakings, he would always proudly announce that he does not pay any taxes, which led to 1 year later, in June of 1977, him being sentenced to 2 years for failure to file taxes. After getting out of jail, Call would leave the Posse and join what was known as the Township Movement. And that's where I kind of start getting in the direction that will flow into where sovereign citizens wrap into all of this. Because if you're familiar with like modern sovereign citizens, you may be confused by how different it sounds to what I'm describing now. But don't worry, I'm painting a picture. We'll eventually get from here to a group of people in Massachusetts having to stand off with the police, declaring themselves to be Moroccan nationals who have a signed treaty from the government. I'm not kidding. Well, Call continued to be a part of various anti-government groups, and it was starting to raise suspicion with local authorities. That eventually led to a couple of U.S. marshals tailing him to a posse meeting. Call may have no longer been a member of the posses or running a chapter, but he was still friends with them. The marshals attempt to follow Call and make an arrest, but in the process, Call, along with the people he was traveling with, step out of the vehicles and shoot the officers to death. This sparked a massive manhunt to find Gordon Call, as well as his accomplices, and became a huge story across national news stations. And naturally, people wanted to know what led to all of this happening in the first place, and that is where the Posse Comitatus first made its way into mainstream news cycles. So eventually, the police found Gordon and killed him. And normally, I would just leave it at that, but you have to hear how insane this was. Okay, so First of all, they find Call's address. And instead of, I don't know, seeing if he's even there, I'm just going to read off the Wikipedia, just for the sake of ease. Okay. Unaware that the farmhouse had been abandoned, the SWAT team fired hundreds of shots into the home, killing Call's dog, and saturated the house with tear gas. That's what they did to a house he wasn't even in. You want to know what they did to a building he was in? So eventually the police track him down to a home he owns in Arkansas, and Sheriff Matthews as well as some deputies enter the house. Matthews entered the kitchen and Call emerged from behind a refrigerator. The two men fired almost simultaneously. Call fired at least one round, which severely wounded Matthews in the heart, and Matthews fired a single 41 Magnum round from his 4-inch Smith & Wesson 57 revolver, which hit Call in the head and instantly killed him. Okay, so Call is dead here, right? Hall and Fitzpatrick, hearing the gunfire, fired several shotgun blasts inside the house, accidentally striking Matthews in the torso with buckshot. They're so excited to kill him, they shoot the sheriff on accident. Matthews managed to get to a police cruiser before he collapsed, and he gasped his last words, "I got him." Matthews would end up dying from this. But that's not all. After Matthews stumbled out of the house, a SWAT team, unaware that Call was dead, began firing thousands, not hundreds, not several hundred, thousands of rounds at the house, eventually setting it ablaze by pouring diesel fuel down the house's chimney. They can do that? They fired that. The house had to look like Swiss cheese at that point. It was just like the concept of a house. And then a SWAT team guy has a gallon of gasoline and diesel. He has a gallon of diesel, pours it down the fireplace, burns down the whole house, and then says Cal's burned remains were found the following day. You know, in hindsight, maybe the ATF agents at Waco showed some restraint. So as you can imagine, that made a lot of headlines and people began to talk. Not only did that encourage infamy with the group to the public at large, but that also encouraged new eyes looking onto it who didn't hate everything it had to offer. It was at this point a lot of the anti-state ideas began to shed away from just like the Christian identity, like exclusively right-wing thing, and started to make their way into other pockets of belief as well. One of these gurus, or better yet, grifters, who were so excited to sell to the incoming flux of people excited to learn about all the new ways to hate their government, was a man named Roger Elvick. Roger Elvick came up with a concept of something known as redemptionism. And trust me, we're going to get into what that means in a minute, but all you need to know for now is that redemptionism is a secret way to steal money from the government based on a series of hijinks. So effectively, Elvick was saying that there are ways people can get money from the state by just filing the right paperwork. He even wrote and sold a book about how to do this whole process called The Redemption Package, which to this day is like the Magna Carta of sovereign citizens. And again, that's if even at the time they're not using the name sovereign citizens yet. At the time, Roger was the spokesman for a group called the Committee of States. But again, all of these kind of posse fractured groups have their own names that eventually reform into like sovereign citizen ideas. One of the things that Roger encouraged people to do was to pay for things through something called a site draft. A site draft is effectively a fake check that is made out of Roger's own company. As you can imagine, the government didn't like that, and Roger got arrested a lot. Between the 90s and 2000s, he served like over a decade in jail, as well as 9 months in a psych ward for reasons that will become very apparent shortly. So that whole detail about getting extra money by filing paperwork with the government kind of became the movement's whole thing. And not only getting money with paperwork, but being really annoying with paperwork. That's because groups like the Posse or the Committee of States or whatever began to engage in something known as paper terrorism. Paper terrorism is when you terrorize people with paper. Only brave statements on the Wendigoon channel. Paper terrorism is the act of targeting a person, an agency, or a business by overloading them in paperwork or filing paperwork in order to place them in trouble. Against individuals, this can be everything from taking out liens on their property or filing false tax claims against them. things that the person probably wouldn't know about until they go to buy a house or something. And then, oh, look, someone's taking out a $2 million lien against your property. And with businesses and legal channels, this can just be filing for new motions and new steps to such a degree that it overflows the system, essentially meaning that nothing can be done. It was these kind of actions that would lead to what is not only probably the biggest event in like sovereign citizen history, but also the longest armed standoff in FBI history. And that is the Montana Freeman standoff. So in the town of Jordan, Montana in the 1990s, there was a group of people who, again, under the whole township idea, which is basically just another name for everything we're talking about, a group of people started what they called the Justice Township. It started out with banks stating that several people were coming in complaining that they had sold something to a member of this Justice Township, and the check would be some loophole, or it would be a fake check, or some means of them not getting the money they were owed. But whenever someone tried to take action against these people, they had effectively created a mob rule on the edges of the town. They claimed that they did not abide by any federal court and instead adhered to their common law and their rule of law, which I guess includes scamming people. This culminated in 1994 when the properties of one of the leaders of the group was to be foreclosed on, and the group simply decided that they were going to take over this small town. In a series of events that deserves its own video, police were trying to intervene in the situation but didn't know how to handle it. The members of the Justice Township were holding their own mock trials where they decided they were going to do things like hang judges. None of that actually happened, but they talked about it. The FBI, seemingly having learned something finally from Waco and Ruby Ridge, decided to not go in guns blazing and just kind of wait it out. Speaking of Ruby Ridge, in April of 1996, the FBI had Bo Gritz and Randy Weaver come to the standoff. If you'll remember, Randy Weaver was the husband who everything happened to at Ruby Ridge, and Bo Gritz was the guy who came and managed to talk him off of the mountain. So, hoping that Bo Gritz can do his magic again, and seemingly Bo and Randy are just friends now, so Bo invited Randy, and the FBI wouldn't let Randy go into the town, probably because they imagined Randy wouldn't help the situation if he said whatever he wanted to off the record to the people in the town, but they allowed Bo to go in and try to talk the locals down. So, after Bo Gritz has this series of five meetings with them, this is in April, and the standoff started in March, so it's been about a month now. After Bo Gritz has his series of meetings, he comes back out to the FBI and says that the people inside aren't going to come out until they are given a 23-person tribunal. All members of the tribunal must be debt-free and cannot be government workers or lawyers, and that Yahweh told them to stay and that they were not going to come out until Yahweh says otherwise. And also a bunch of, quote, legal mumbo-jumbo. Eventually, after 81 days, on June the 14th of 1996, the siege ended. And thankfully, no one was killed, but this was a huge story in the news at the time, and similar to the Gordon Call incident earlier, put a lot more eyes onto the movement. So, you're probably hearing all this and thinking, okay, what movement are we even talking about, right? Because I've talked about white supremacist stuff, and I've talked about, like, guys killing police officers. Now I've talked about a standoff. Like, what is it these people are even on about? Why are so many people so ready to hop on board to whatever they're selling? I am so glad you asked. Because now I get to talk about the weird and wacky history of the world according to sovereign citizens. So the first thing to make clear is sovereign citizen is a very scattered term. Just because two people call themselves sovereign citizens does not mean they hold the exact same ideology. As mentioned earlier, there's like white supremacist sovereign citizens, and as we're going to talk about in a minute, there are black supremacist sovereign citizens. So in other words, every one of them does not believe everything I'm about to say. This is just the narrative that tends to pop up in a lot of their written documents, or the kind of rhetoric you'll hear them espouse online. Because as we're going to talk about in this official account, it is hardly official at the best of times. So again, speaking in generality, the first thing you need to know about the sovereign citizen idea is that, for one, the United States government does not exist. More specifically, it used to exist, but then it quit existing at some point. What point is that, you may ask? Well, that's a great question. because there is no hard consensus for when this actually happened. But all they know is that at some point, the government quit being the government. Most theories will say this happened sometime during the Civil War. Other alternatives is it happened during the creation of Washington, D.C., like the formation of it. And others say it was in 1933 when the United States dollar left the gold standard and became a fiat currency. At whatever point it happened, the United States quit being a country and instead became a corporation. A corporation of who, you may ask? Great Britain, or also Israel sometimes. A lot of sovereign citizen movements love to hammer home the use of language in legal settings, only they always use it incorrectly. For example, in 1878, when the District of Columbia, or Washington, D.C., was formed into a municipal corporation, they take the word corporation quite literally as to say the entire government is now a business. Because of that, they believe that the United States switched from a common law idea to a commercial law idea. In other words, the country once ran off of laws and rules that were made by consensus and for the operation of its people, but now exist for the operation of a company. It's because of this, in a lot of their legalese, you will hear terms like admiralty law or maritime law, because again, they're under the idea that the United States is effectively an international extension of Great Britain. So any of their laws might as well be the rule of the admiralty or the rule of trade over the seas, maritime. Some will take this to the extent to say that the bar, the thing which lawyers in the United States are judged up against, actually stands for British Accreditation Registry. Or that the gold fringes seen on American flags in courtrooms is not just an aesthetic choice, but is actually a subtle clue to all of us, for some reason, that it is an extension of the Navy, because naval vessels will do that, I guess, sometimes. Therefore, any interaction you have with the United States government is binding you to that massive corporation. So the only way you can be free of it is if you opt out. See, a lot of sovereign citizens will say that the United States is a super evil, massive corporate empire, which I can get behind in isolation, but that also for some reason you can do business loopholes to get out of it. Like, they'll just let you out if you know the correct words to say in court and the correct paperwork to file. I already talked about some of them, like resisting birth certificates or driver's license or social security numbers. But another big one is the separation of you yourself, the person, from you yourself, the business entity. This is something known as the straw man theory, which was put forward by Roger Elvick, the guy that wrote the Redemption Package. The idea is whenever the United States left either the gold backing for the American dollar or during the Civil War or whatever, in order to make the dollar have value, they began leveraging American individuals to other governments based on their potential monetary factor. In other words, whenever you're born in the United States or do anything to get a United States citizenship, that is leverage that the government creates about how much money you could potentially make in your lifetime. Depending on who you ask, this can be tens of thousands of dollars to millions of dollars. So, tied to every individual, there is an invisible bank account that the United States has stashed and is just banking on the idea that you'll never go to cash it in. So, a lot of the strategies that they will use in order to come up with these money schemes is to draw off of that secret bank account that they are tied to. This is done by separating yourself from your legal identity and then drawing from your legal identity's worth. Or in other words, your straw man's worth. One of their points of evidence for this is that often on official documentation, your name will be presented in all caps. So there is the Isaiah, which is me, capital I-S-A-I-A-H, and then there is all caps I-S-A-I-A-H. And if I, lowercase Isaiah, can remove myself from uppercase Isaiah, I get all of the money that uppercase Isaiah is entitled towards. That's also leveraged to other governments that I can just take for some reason. And there are all kinds of proposed means to go about this. You can file a trademark for your name. You can file a financing statement against your straw man or against yourself, but again, in all caps. You can file specific documents with the Secretary of Treasury. When you go to pay bills, you can simply fill out your social security number, which means the government is entitled to draw the money off of the secret bank account that social security number is attached to. You can report funds as the tax withheld. You can file a 1099 OID, which in a lot of circles is believed to be the secret document you can file to get access to this bank account. In some cases, you can simply write taken for value on a check, or accepted for value, or A4V, which is a big thing in these circles. You can even simply write on documents in red ink, which red ink, according to them, is used in order to end contracts a lot of the time. So by filing official paperwork with red ink, you are subtly telling the government that you no longer want to be a part of their corporation. And again, for any of this to work, the government has to also let you off the hook if you know how to outsmart it. For some reason, in a lot of these theories, the post office always comes up as being like a huge mediator of the government's true power. So in a lot of the documentation they file, there will be stamps attached because that is, again, like a cheat code to get it through to the correct channels. Also, the FBI and Treasury Direct websites have also had to make statements saying, what? Because they were asked so many times if there's secret bank accounts tied to every person's name worth millions of dollars. So I'm sure that was confusing for everyone at first. Another way that they'll do this to say that you can outsmart the government if you figure out all their secret tricks is through speech. So for example, if you are ever to refer to yourself as John Smith, then you are, because that is your government assigned name, tying yourself through the contract by your own grammar. So a lot of the time, they will not refer to themselves by their name. Instead, it will be John colon Smith, or John the son of Smith, or in parentheses or quotation marks around it, or some way of not just saying that that's their name. Another thing you'll see, especially in court or traffic stops, is phrases like, oh, I am not John Smith, I am the person existing and traveling the earth who is hitherto referred as John Smith. And several will say that in any legal interaction that you have with a government employee, your phrasing has to be perfect or else you subtly give in to this social contract. So for example, if a cop asks you, do you understand me? You should never say, I understand. Because by saying that, you are saying that you are under the standing of the police officer, and instead need to say something like, I comprehend. Because they are so opposed to driver's license, none of them have them. But their reasoning around it is that driving or being a driver only applies to someone who is transporting paid passengers or moving commercial goods, like driver the occupation. And instead, they are not driving, they are simply traveling or commuting. It even comes down to the phrasing of the term citizens. Like, again, one of the big theories within a lot of these ideas is that during the Civil War was when all this took place, right? So when the 14th Amendment passed, the amendment that made slaves and other people in the United States citizens of the United States, well, those are 14th Amendment citizens, citizens with a capital C, which indicates that they are a member of the American corporation. But if you are a citizen, lowercase c, that refers to you, the individual who is a free living person. But with a capital C, that refers to you as a 14th Amendment property of the state. Figures in the movement, like David Miller, have claimed to invent something known as quantum grammar to use in courtrooms to get the exact results you want. These include things like only nouns matter, use as few adjectives or verbs as you can because they don't exist legally for some reason, and that every sentence you say needs to be at least 13 words and begin with the word for.
This is the court. And of all the 2 million words in the English language, we got 720 words that are syntax. That's it.
David Miller also claimed to have been made the king of Hawaii because he turned Hawaii into a verb. Whatever that means. Another figure named Russell Gold claims to have become the Postmaster General of the United States, because again, the post office is so important, That makes him the ruler of the United States. And he did this by filing paperwork in the correct way, I guess. They also love to take old documents and pull them completely out of context to use language that gets them whatever result they want. Like, for example, the whole discretion between driving and traveling comes from old documents that say people have the freedom to travel wherever they want, not recognizing driving to be another stage up from simply walking around. But they'll pull from everything. They'll pull things from the Bible. They'll pull things from the Magna Carta. They'll pull pieces of the Constitution taken out of context. Again, leaving out the parts they don't like the 14th Amendment or whatever, and keeping the parts they do like, I should be allowed to drive a vehicle whenever I want, I guess. An example of this is the Moorish sovereign citizens. So the Moorish sovereign citizen group comes from something known as the Moorish Science Temple of America. So to clarify, this isn't to be confused with the Moors, which is a sect of like Muslims across the world. And it's not even really the Moorish Science Temple, because it's even an offshoot of that. The Moorish Science Temple began in the 1930s and was an early predecessor to the Nation of Islam. It was founded by a man named Noble Drew Ali in the 1930s, who said that black people are actually descended from the ancient Moabites. Not the Moabites mentioned in like the Old Testament of the Bible, the Canaanites, but a group of ancient Moroccans who have been kind of lost to history. So years later, groups of people from the Moorish Science Temple started to adopt the sovereign citizen ideas and work off of something from 1786 called the American-Moroccan Friendship Treaty, which for one is a really cute name for a treaty. But this was a treaty in 1786 between America and Morocco that effectively declared good standing in trade routes across the ocean between the two countries, which, fun fact, is still the longest standing treaty agreement in United States history. But they take that out of context, a document about trade laws across the Atlantic Ocean, and say instead, it is to say that any Moroccan citizen is a friend of the United States and therefore does not have to abide by United States law. And because, if you'll remember, the idea behind the Moorish Science Temple is that all members of the temple are actually descended from Moroccans, well, that's really convenient if you don't want to follow the law. You'll also see a lot of people in this side of the movement attach the words El or Bey to their name as a further connection to their supposed Moroccan roots. Some members of the group will even take it a step further and say that the only true citizens of the United States are black Americans who are descended from ancient Moroccans. In 2021, a group of Moorish sovereign citizens were traveling through Wakefield, Massachusetts when they were stopped by the police. They were loaded up with weapons, ammunition, and body armor, and said that they were going to train at a piece of private property across the state. Despite a lot of what they had being illegal in Massachusetts, as well as their whole demeanor being, you know, suspicious, they said because of the Moroccan Friendship Treaty, they do not have to abide by the laws of the United States, much less Massachusetts. And again, all of this is pulled off of a document from the 1700s that isn't even about the thing that they say it's about. It is so frustrating how they will pull words and concepts from anything except the thing that actually applies to whatever's happening. So normally, what this looks like in practice, either it be traffic stops or in court, is the most annoying thing you've ever seen. There are hundreds of videos you can find online, thousands of videos, I'm sure a lot of you have come across, of sovereign citizens getting in fights with police officers or getting in fights with judges because they didn't fill out a law or do something they're supposed to, and then they just want to keep fact-checking and pulling obscure phrases from documents that don't even apply to what's going on in order to say how they are immune from everything else other people have to abide by.
You might not accept it, but it doesn't mean it's not happening.
You guys are turned to me for no reason at all.
And you know what? If I'm being completely honest, if it just ended there, if it was just people who get pulled over by the police and say, I actually don't need a license because I don't have to follow your laws because of this piece of paper from 1840, then I would just think it's funny. Because this kind of thing never works, and most of the time it just results in a funny altercation, right? But a lot of the times, people with this ideology will use the ideas to steal money or steal property. I already talked about, like, back in the Justice Township, that whole thing kicked off because people were effectively writing fake checks. And not to mention all the people like Roger Elvick, who made a living off of selling this ideology to people who most of the time were in dire straits financially and looking for any way out. But then you have figures like Barton Butts, who did the same thing, trying to convince people that they could get fraudulent treasury checks in order to pay off all their bills, while conveniently only taking cash for people who, you know, bought this ideology off of him. At one point, even convincing a woman to try to pay off the house she was getting foreclosed on with one of these false checks. And then you have figures like Ronald DeLorme, who helped found, or pretend to found, a fake Native American group called the Little Shell Pembina Band of North America, who claims to be a tribe that is owed 53 million acres in the United States. One of their assets was investigated for $27.9 million in Ponzi schemes. When the investigation began, the investigators got hit with $1.7 trillion worth of lawsuits. But that's nothing compared to figures like Winston Shrout, who mailed over $1 quadrillion in counterfeit securities. Which, say what you want about a lot of these guys, but if you tried to get $1 quadrillion from the government, you probably believe in what you're talking about at least a little bit. You know, if the jail time's anything to go off of. On the more humorous note, there are figures like Anna Von Ritz, who claimed to be a common law judge in Alaska, which is a fancy way of saying they decided that they are now judge of their own private little court, which is the real court, because again, all of the American courts are illegitimate. And in 2015, Anna sent a letter to the judge ordering the arrest of the Secretary of Treasury, all of Congress, and President Obama. What's really funny about that is for a while, people just thought it was a judge had ordered for the arrest of Obama, which turned a lot of heads until, you know, common law. One of the funniest is a woman named Heather Ann Tucci Giroff, who was a former state prosecutor, like not common law, an actual government state prosecutor, who then fell into the sovereign citizen movement and created a group called the One People's Public Trust, which in 2012 claimed to have foreclosed the government. And she did this by, of course, filling out the correct Universal Commercial Code paperwork. So really kind of them, if they are this super evil, you know, mega corporation, to leave little ends for us like that. She claimed that after this went through, once they had actual worth value currency like gold, that's another thing, by the way, if not with their own private checks and stuff like that, a lot of these people will only accept value if it's in gold or silver. She claimed that after the government was foreclosed, all of her followers would be given $10 billion in gold. And then when the money didn't show up, she said, and I'm not kidding, that aliens had it. Her and her business partner, Randall Bean, were wanted by the government for about $2 million in financial fraud, and they arrest Bean, and then they go to arrest her, only to find out that she was at the White House trying to demand a conversation with, at the time, President Donald Trump. And a lot of the time, again, the majority of the time, these sovereign citizen stories are just funny. They're just kind of a goofy scenario of someone getting out of their depth with trying to understand the legal system or courts or something like that, right? But then you have situations like this where people are legitimately being hurt financially, or they're having liens put against their house, like I mentioned earlier. You have forms of paper terrorism that do damage people's lives. But in other scenarios, sadly, you have people who are members of these groups doing things much worse. In 1995, the Oklahoma City bombing, the largest terrorist attack in the United States until 9/11, was committed by Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols. Terry Nichols was a self-proclaimed sovereign citizen. This was also a year before the Montana standoff that I mentioned earlier, so you had this whole realm of hate against the government that was happening at once, and people who were doing very evil things in the name of that. That isn't to say that these ideologies create monsters, but this kind of rhetoric, the idea that everyone in power is part of some super evil conspiracy that is trying to take you for all you're worth, rather than just, you know, the way the world works sometimes, it causes a lot of people to do a lot of bad things. Or at least people who are already willing to do bad things are attracted by the aesthetics of it. Or in cases like Jared Fogle, yes, the subway guy who was convicted for all of those things he was convicted for, tried to use sovereign citizen arguments while in prison to get off of his prison time. Of course, it didn't work, but the arguments aren't so funny when they're being used for explicitly evil excuses. In 2003, in Abbeville, South Carolina, two police officers were killed by a family of three who were self-proclaimed individuals, sovereign citizens, whatever, who decided to kill some police officers who were near their property. In the 2010 West Memphis shootings, which was caught on a police dash cam, two police officers pulled over a father and son who had weed as well as weapons in their vehicle, and when they stepped out of the car, they killed the two police officers who pulled them over. It later being found out that the two of them were identified sovereign citizens. A sovereign citizen in 2016 committed the Baton Rouge police shootings, in which four police officers were killed. At least four were killed on scene. One died 6 years later in 2022 from injuries he sustained during the shooting. And perhaps one of the most recent tragedies to come from this, in 2021, the Waukesha Christmas Parade attacks, I'm sure a lot of you guys remember the videos of the SUV driving through a crowded parade and hitting as many people as it could. Daryl Brooks was a sovereign citizen. So much so that, like many sovereign citizens, he elected to represent himself in court, and then while in court tried to make a bunch of sovereign citizen arguments. A lot of it resulted in him getting thrown out of the courtroom. Thankfully, I guess, it also resulted in him doing a bad job. But it went from being something comedic to something frustrating, seeing someone who was so evil talk about all of these different reasons and loopholes that he should be let off for the crime, knowing while he was sitting in that courtroom in the first place, it changes perspective. At the end of the day, I think there are three kinds of people in the whole, like, sovereign citizen zeitgeist, right? There's people who have a chip on their shoulder, like Daryl Brooks, people who want to hurt people and see it as an avenue to do it. And then you've got snake oil salesmen and people who could really use some snake oil. You have people who know what they're doing, who are selling an ideology to people who are willing to buy, and then you have the people who are willing to buy because they're desperate. The majority of people who try to do these things are people who have a court case coming up that they don't know how they're going to afford a lawyer, so maybe this is a way to get out of it. Or people who are down on their luck in poverty and don't know how they're going to be able to afford their house, and then someone tells them that there's secret money that they can get from the government, and they have no choice but to hope it's real. And the vast majority of them, like I said, they mostly make for funny courtroom videos, right? That's how I found out about them in the first place. But on pretty much every other side of it, it's either something evil or something tragic. If there is a fourth kind of sovereign citizen, if there's the one in a million out there who thinks this is real, who does not have any, you know, preconceived mental illness that makes them think this way, if they earnestly think that the government is a super evil corporation that they can just file the right paperwork to get out of, it's so frustrating because in a sense, they're so close, right? Like, yes, the government does make laws that benefit them and do things for profit. That's great. What are you going to do with that information? And then they're like, I'm going to file a 1099 that gets me $20 million. And it's like, okay. Most of the time with these cases, the people become the very thing that they accuse the powers at be of being capable of, right? They say that the government is full of these evil leaders who are running their secret courts and then stealing money from us. And their response to that is to create these miniature courts where they elect to hang people on their own and then use fake checks to steal money. It's like so many of them aren't mad that the government has some superpower, it's that they just want to have that superpower. But for the like five sovereign citizens out there who are good-willed and just want to find a way to win in the world, I promise you there are better ways to go about it besides whatever all of this was. And honestly, I don't know what all of this was. I have been on a bender reading about this whole thing. This video started as, oh, these courtroom videos are kind of funny. I wonder what that's about. And then it got to Moorish science temples and standoffs with the FBI, which it always comes back to that somehow for me. And yeah, I don't know what this was. I don't know how this became what it is, but I wasn't going to do all of that and not tell you all about it. So you're welcome for whatever suffering I just put you through. And good, I hope it hurt. But jokes aside, I hope you enjoyed this silly little video, and above all else, thank you for watching. This was such a strange little foray into whatever it was. Like, I do like it when it happens, when a video starts out as like simple, like, oh, I'm just going to take a quick look at this, and then it becomes like a week's worth of just reading different court cases and stuff like that. It's a lot of fun. I enjoy it. It's one of my favorite parts about this job. I've had friends tell me like, oh, you should get someone to help you with research or to help put together scripts for videos or bullet points or whatever for videos. And honestly, that to me, that takes the fun out of it. If I could get someone to sit here and record, that would be more enjoyable. And then they wouldn't have like an annoying mustache, right? So you guys would probably like it too. But to me, the video is the research part, the learning about it. That's what's a lot of fun. And hopefully you guys enjoyed learning about it in whatever way I could convey it. So yeah, I got to get editing on this. Like I said, I believe at the time this video goes up, it will be tomorrow. But Friday, I am going to be on Jimmy Here's stream. We're going to be raising money for Gamers Outreach to make Christmas a little bit more special for some kids in hospitals. So if you all want to check out that, it'll be linked. Jimmy's Twitch will be linked in the description. And if you can't check it out but still want to donate, the Tiltify link will be there as well. Whatever capacity you choose to share, donate, watch, means the world. Appreciate it. It's going to be like an all-day stream, like 10 or 12 hours, so feel free to pop in, ask some questions, say hi, see what we're doing, watch us torture each other. There's a lot of donation goals that like we have to do increasingly painful stuff, so that'll be great. Can't wait, but if it wasn't for the kids, I wouldn't do it. But yeah, that'll be in the description, so check that out if you're interested. Again, the merch that is going to the ARP, my merch drop, is still active. I think it will be till like January 2nd, so link for that's in the description as well. And thank you all so much for the support you've shown on that already. Creepcast merch is also live right now, but that one's just going to my checkbook, so I'm not going to shill for it as hard. Feel bad after two charities to then drop another plug. Yeah, just a lot going on. Thank you all so much for your support with everything. It means the world on the podcast, on this. Just you guys are great, really. So I'm going to get to editing this. Hopefully you guys enjoyed it. Hopefully it wasn't a huge waste of your time. And I believe that should do it for now, but I just want to say thank you for watching. Hope that you enjoyed. And I will see you in the next one. Bye!